It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum number 55, where we look at some of the major news stories in the world. And we begin with this story, this incredible story from the United States.
We begin with breaking news out of New York. Reports that American financier Jeffrey Epstein has died by suicide. He was facing multiple sex offense charges and being held in a Manhattan jail. Let's bring in Natasha Fatah, who's on the story for us.
Jeffrey Epstein, indicted for sex trafficking and conspiracy. He used his great wealth to have private jets and many homes and procure girls, young girls, for wealthy people. And he was about to stand trial for that. And apparently there were many wealthy people, business people, celebrities, politicians, who were a little bit nervous about what he was going to say. There were links, allegedly, to the Clintons. Here in Australia, it's funny, this gets reported in Australia. It doesn't get reported in the United Kingdom, that there were links to Prince Andrew. Do you know why it doesn't get reported in the United Kingdom, by the way? It's because there's an agreement between the palace and the British media that they don't print these kind of scandalous stories. And it's fascinating being in Australia, where there's almost an industry to be made out of speculation about the royals. Well, Epstein has been found dead. He apparently committed suicide, and the conspiracy theorists are having a real go, and it's little wonder. In a society which has been brought up on all these conspiracy theories, it does seem more than passing strange that a powerful man who is about to blow the whistle, if you like, on many people is found dead. Now, it may be that he did commit suicide. It may be that he didn't. If he did commit suicide, then the guards, the camera not working, the guards not being available, him not being on suicide watch despite a week earlier having threatened to commit suicide, all of that is highly suspicious. It's, I don't know, just a deeply sad and depressing story. Another sad and depressing story is what's going on in Hong Kong. Even as I record this, I'm conscious that by the time you listen to it, it may well be out of date. I've just read an article showing pictures of tanks and troops massed at the Hong Kong border, and seen some of the scenes where it seems as though protesters are attacking some of the Hong Kong police. Although they argue that the people who are doing that are agitators, that many of the protesters who are causing the violence are Chinese police. It is a desperately sad situation. Personally, I cannot see how the Chinese government are going to allow this to continue. And I suspect that we're going to end up with a Tiananmen Square style tragedy if things don't calm down. But that, of course, is disrupting the whole world market, so that we've got a situation where the stock markets are struggling, not least because China and Germany look as though they could go into recession, but also because of the uncertainty in the world. It's wars and rumors of wars. It's been fascinating to watch the propaganda. So I subscribe to a couple of Chinese news services, including the People's Daily, which is a Chinese government agency. And it's incredible how they put forward the things about protesters and terrorists. They call them terrorists. The protesters are terrorists. And how the Chinese police are being applauded and welcomed as heroes and so on. And that is propaganda. We have our own forms of propaganda in through our own corporations. Here's an astonishing fact. This one utterly amazes me. Amazon, guess how much profit Amazon made in the United States last year? 11 trillion. 11,200 million. That's what they made in profit for 2018. Now guess this. How much tax did they pay on that profit? Remember? 11 trillion. How much tax did they pay? Not 1 cent. Because using tax exemption laws, clever accounts, and everything else, you have a multi-billionaire corporation not paying a penny tax. See, when Amazon and Microsoft and Google and all these other corporations virtue signal to us about care for the poor and supporting the oppressed, remember this. They don't pay taxes. Or at least they don't pay their just taxes. And it's the poor who suffer because of that. And then there's another kind of propaganda. Let me just give you a couple of things from the transgender news. First of all, Netflix are going to have Nickelodeon doing a cartoon, which will have a transgender storyline. And then there's Australian cricket. This is an astonishing story. Kevin Roberts, the chief executive of Australian cricket, wrote an article in which he stated the new policy for Cricket Australia, which is that transgender men will be able to compete in women's sport, or transgender women. In other words, men who say that they are women will be able to compete in women's cricket. Now, his justification for this is quite astounding. He says it's a robust, inclusive, and fair policy, and that cricket is a game for all, and people will be encouraged to play according to their gender identity. Well, I'm sorry, cricket is not a game for all in terms of playing. That itself is a stupid statement to make. I'm not able to play cricket in terms of my ability, perhaps age. There are lots of different things that restrict that. As a man, I should not be able to play women's cricket. If you allow men to play women's cricket, even if they self-identify as men, when they clearly are not women, then you destroy women's cricket. And so here we have the director of Cricket Australia, in effect, saying women's cricket is over. And by the way, that's also happened in the United Kingdom. Have you seen the Philadelphia cheese advert? I don't know if you have, because you're not going to be able to see it on television now. You'll get it on YouTube. Recommend you watch it before they lift it off as well.
New dad too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, look at this lunch.
Yeah, hard to choose. Oh, this looks good.
Now, it's an advert which shows two men with babies, with prams, stopping at a counter and going to get some Philadelphia cheese, and they're so distracted that they decide that the babies are put on the counter and they spin round and so on. And that's the advert. It's okay. It doesn't make you want to buy Philadelphia cheese. Philadelphia cheese speaks for itself, but nonetheless, that's the advert. But it's being banned. Why is it being banned? Well, it's been banned because of gender stereotyping. Seriously, 128 people complained that it showed men as being less capable of looking after children than women. And the Advertising Standards Authority agreed, saying that although it portrayed the man as somewhat hapless and inattentive, which resulted in them being unable to care for the children effectively, it said that the ad relied on the stereotype that men were unable to care for children as well as women, and implied that the fathers had failed to look after the children properly because of their gender. It presented gender stereotypes in a way that was likely to cause harm and therefore breach the code. Seriously? Seriously? A light-hearted ad about men forgetting their children and taking up cheese instead is going to cause harm. Well, Again, that's the world in which we live. Now, I want to share with you an amazing letter, an amazing piece of feedback that I received from someone concerning what we showed last week with the young man standing up at the American Socialist Conference and complaining about how he wanted people around him to be quiet because he suffered from an illness which made him react badly to noise and he couldn't cope. He had oversensory things and so on. And, you know, it's kind of all too easy, isn't it, to laugh at that kind of stuff. And someone wrote me, and I thought this was such a good letter. I'm going to read it to you, so please be patient with me. I'll read you not all of it, but a good part of it. I am autistic, and I find the background music in shops very difficult to deal with, which affects everyday life quite significantly. I, too, find conference situations difficult because people do like to chat. When this happens, I struggle to focus on the conversation I am supposed to be having. It can be so bad that I get lots of sentences from different conversations, which, of course, does not make sense. The solution is to go and find somewhere quieter. And let's just keep going with this letter. What was going on in the video was from the neurodiversity movement. Now, this was a new one to me, and I found this really helpful, so continue to bear with it. Neurodiversity essentially means autism, although other conditions are included to make it more inclusive. The movement promotes the idea that autism is an identity. I don't like this. I feel I am so much more than my autism. You are disabled by society. Society should accommodate you completely. This is actually impossible because autism is a very heterogeneous condition. Sorry, forgive my poor reading. Personally, the correspondent goes on, I think that this is a load of dangerous nonsense. Remember, this is someone who suffers from autism. But many autistic people have been taken in by it. It gives them a community which kind of understands. However, in order to be part of this, you have to agree with everything, including a strong stance in favor of LGBT. For many people, it's the first time they felt accepted as they are. It's comforting to blame society for your problems. LGBT activism does this too. The letter continues. However, a side effect is that they want everyone else to fully accommodate them, even if this makes other people uncomfortable. I do workplace assessments for autistic employees, and we are increasingly coming across those who provide me with a long list of unreasonable, quotation marks, reasonable adjustments they think their employer should make. Under these circumstances, my recommendations generally include a list of reasonable adjustments the employer should make for their colleagues. So the autistic employee is then not happy because they think an autistic assessor should agree with them. The employers are very happy because I'm impartial and listen to both sides. I suspect by now that certain aspects are starting to sound familiar, and yes, they are trying to use LGBT techniques to encourage, force society to change in their favor. As someone who disagrees with them, listen to this, I'm accused of internalized ableism. However, I struggle to get my head around the idea of ableism. Just as in LGBT, they are very abusive to those who disagree. There are many autistic people, generally those with more severe autism and a scientific bent, who do not agree with them. They also abuse parents of autistic children who are struggling with their children. I think this is appalling. In the UK, neurodiversity activists are making a lot of noise. The Labour Party has treated their demands sympathetically, and guess what? They have also infiltrated research and the medical profession. Their cry is, "Nothing about us without us," which sounds good, but which actually excludes a lot of autistic people. It is already skewing research about autism. The guy in the video has probably subscribed to the neurodiversity, not neodiversity, but the neurodiversity movement. His request was aimed at helping him to function. Personally, I think it is unreasonable to expect everyone around me not to chat to each other. People like to chat. Social chit-chat is about building relationships, and that should not be denied to people. The solution is to find a quieter place where you'll find others who prefer quieter places. Autism does not have a monopoly on sensory issues. It is just not possible to accommodate everyone all of the time. I love this letter writer because well, they're informing me and they're in helping and they're being balanced. They go on. I much prefer the Christian message. Guess what? When I have to be in conference situations, the Lord ensures I get to speak to those I need to speak to in a way that does not actually totally overload my senses. I often don't know who I need to speak to, but the Lord does. If you have any questions about this topic, do not hesitate to ask. I will finish with a book recommendation. In the Valley of the Shadow by Hans Lilge. It is the account of a pastor who was arrested by the Gestapo towards the end of the Second World War. He was at a strong risk of execution but was liberated by the Allies. He describes how God helped him. I've been going through a very difficult time for several reasons. The world has gone completely mad. This book has helped. The world went completely mad in Germany. God supports and helps me through the difficult times. He uses difficulties and suffering to draw us closer to himself. Well, thank you so much, sister, for sending me that email. I found it incredibly helpful and thought-provoking and made me more aware of things. And I found your response very God-honoring and encouraging. God bless you. Okay, let's come from the sanity of this Christian sister who suffers with autism to the insanity of the modern political world and the Green leader, Caroline Lucas, who this week seriously proposed that there should be a takeover government, a cabinet appointed, which consisted only of women. In her sexism, she says there should be no men. Now, this has been really, really badly received because her proposed cabinet didn't include anyone gay, didn't include... they were all white. The sisters were all white. What's this got to do with democracy? And yet she seriously proposed this. Sisters are doing it for themselves. Yeah, I love the song. But the reality or the fantasy or the delusion of what Lucas is proposing is both laughable and dangerous. Let me go on to some quick world news. Gibraltar, this story from Gibraltar. The Social Democrats in Gibraltar have said that if they're elected to power, they're going to repeal the abortion law. That's actually great news, wonderful news. Argentina. Argentina's President Mauricio Macri is putting financial markets at the heart of his campaign for elections in October because he lost the primary by an unexpectedly large margin to his Peronist rival Alberto Fernandez, who won 47% of the vote. The Argentina peso devalued by more than 25%. The equity market slid by 37%. Asian markets then went down on Monday, and the US yield curve flattened to levels not seen before the financial crisis. This, together with the situation in China and in Germany, is getting us ready, I think, for another financial crash. Even as I speak today in Australia, their stock market has gone down and the Wall Street stock market has gone down about 3%, which is actually a significant percentage to go down in a day. One other bit of world news, and that is from Australia, where we have, I want to refer to an article called Daughter Slaughter, and it's back again to the abortion thing. And here's what's happening with the abortion stuff. The New South Wales Parliament is about to allow gender selection. So they're going to allow babies in the womb to be killed if they're female. This is from feminists. It's a desperate situation. So let me give you my quote of the week from the Spectator article that I got this from, and you can get on the website. New South Wales is the last state domino to fall on abortion and marks the end of a more just and decent era. Looking back to the Bourne case in 1938, where Justice McNaughton declared, "The law of the land has always held that human life is sacred, and the protection the law gives to human life extends also to the unborn child in the womb. The unborn child in the womb must not be destroyed unless the destruction of the child is for preserving the still more precious life of the mother." That ethical seriousness has been trashed. We now live under laws, red in tooth and claw, that give no protection whatsoever to the unborn child in the womb. We are becoming morally a society of dingoes amongst whom no baby is safe. How did it come to this? And what is there left to love and fight for in a land that sacrifices its young, formerly in law, on the altar of male libido and feminist spite? Well, amen to that. You know, this week in my office where I'm recording this, just outside, there was a stabbing by a man who we believe was mentally ill. I don't think it was in a terrorist thing, but it was quite a disturbing thing that he stabbed a random person on the street. I don't know if you saw it in your news, but it just reminded me again of what a broken world we live in. And the church is here as the answer to that world. So what are we doing? Believe it or not, Norwich Cathedral have put a helter-skelter in the middle of their cathedral in order to reach people. Gavin Ashenden, who I've got a lot of admiration for some of the way that he engages with the culture, rightly pointed out that this was trivial and it wasn't really going to help. In fact, it reminded me of another thing, that this Beatles song. You know, Helter Skelter is considered to be perhaps the beginning of the heavy metal thing, but Helter Skelter, that song, is used more by Charles Manson. It's more famous, rather, for Charles Manson perceiving it as being a prophetic song about the end of the world. Well, it does seem as though we are on a helter skelter, and as though the church, in its pathetic response. When I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. But maybe we're not here at all. Maybe we're just a computer. Remember this from The Matrix?
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Well, Richard Dawkins has seriously proposed that we are living in a computer simulation that we shouldn't even bother to try and find out. Dawkins is a man who thinks that it's laughable that an almighty God could raise his son from the dead, and yet he seriously goes along with the idea that we may not really exist, that we're just a computer's imagination. As our correspondent said, it's a mad, mad world. How deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more. Well, Christ offers the truth, but he offers a whole lot more because he is the truth. He offers himself. He offers love. He offers so much more. But not according to Marty Sampson. I'm going to leave you with this one. Marty, who is Marty Sampson, you may say? Marty Sampson is one of the Hillsong leaders. And in an Instagram post this week, he announced that he was losing his faith. He said nobody discusses questions like God and science or why would God send people to hell, all the questions we spend all our time discussing. And yet he publicly announced this with a picture of Samson, you know, see, Samson and Samson pulling down the temple as though he was pulling down the temple.
I've written an article on this.
And to be honest, I wrote it not because I wanted to have a go at Marty Sampson. I don't know him. I wrote it to respond to what he said because I was asked to do so by Premier Christianity. And what's really depressed me about this is the number of Christians who said, oh, it's unloving and you shouldn't say anything and here's somebody who's struggling and so on. Well, I'm sorry. I responded to what he said. He attacked Jesus Christ. He attacked the Bible. He dissed his own church. He's done Hillsong a great deal of harm. And we're expected just to say, oh, that's okay, it's fine, you find your own way and all the rest of it. No. You have to speak in love, but you have to speak the truth in love. And the fact is, his statements were ridiculous. They were wrong. In fact, they were self-contradictory. He said nobody spoke about it, and then he followed it up by posting pictures of Ravi Zacharias and other apologists who do speak about all these different things. So he's fully aware of the fact that people do speak about them. But a lot of Christians are being damaged by these celebrity Christians renouncing their faith and turning their back on Christ. My faith is not based on these people. Let me tell you something. When I became a Christian, it was through a girl who never really had anything go wrong in her life. And when she did, she gave up on her faith. Now, it almost shattered me because it was because of her I'd come to believe. And then I realized, no, I don't believe because of you. I believe because of Jesus, and I follow Jesus, and I know Jesus, and I love Jesus. And that's what all of this is about.
I cast my mind to Calvary, where Jesus bled and died for me. I see his wounds, his hands, his feet. My Savior on that cursed tree.
So, Oh Praise the Name is one of the songs that Marty helped write. I'll still sing it, because it's a wonderful song, and I wasn't praising him, I wasn't singing along with him, didn't even know who he was. I'm praising Jesus, and that's what we're here for, to proclaim Christ. So in the midst of this world, with all its madness, Christ is still Lord, Christ is still King. Well, thank you. We shall leave you. If you want to send us more feedback, please feel free to do so. And if you wish to support, go to the Podbean. Otherwise, we shall see you next week. God bless. Bye.